One of the verifiable facts of history is that Jesus loved to tell stories. Now, that isn't that surprising. I don't think there are many children who are going to sleep at night who ask their parents, "Mom, Dad, can you give me some news from the day?" No, the number one thing that most children will ask is, "Can you tell me a story?" Stories captivate us. Stories give us a sense of understanding. We're drawn into the midst of a story. And parables were one of the forms of story that Jesus seemed to love to tell. We only get them in the first three Gospels. The Gospel of John, Jesus kind of has more long speeches and things that are used as metaphors more than parables themselves. But across the four Gospels, the first three Gospels, there are about 40 of these short stories that Jesus tells. Kind of depends how you number them and whether that's the same parable or whether it's just a slightly different version of the same parable or a very different parable itself. But of these 40 parables that Jesus tells, I doubt that many people would say that our number one favorite parable of all time is the one that we've just heard. This parable of the dishonest manager, the shrewd steward, is at best weird and confusing. Most of us are just left scratching our head going, hang on, this guy is dishonest, he's breaking the rules, he's cheating people out of their money, and yet the master, and it's the master of the steward, not Jesus. Jesus doesn't come into the story. So remember, this is a story, this is a parable. It's not meant to be moral teaching for us, to give us, you know, how to win friends and influence people. This is not instruction on how to rip off your boss or how to be more successful within the world. I mean, I read this statistic during the week that there are the eight billionaires, the most wealthy billionaires in the world, all of them, unfortunately, are men. Those eight billionaires together have more wealth than the lowest 4 billion people in the world. I mean, that's just an astounding kind of reality, that these eight individuals have amassed more money than 4 billion people across the face of our world. So Luke is very strong in having a go at the rich and the wealthy. He has no time for the rich and the wealthy. So we need to get the context of this. The gospel also follows directly on from the parable of the lost sons, or the parable of the prodigal that we heard last week. There's no break. It's just Jesus says another parable. Here's another story. So it's in the same group of teaching. We'll hear also from chapter 16 next week. But there he has a little section where he addresses the Pharisees rather than his disciples. And then he teaches another parable that is also really challenging for us about wealth and riches. So this parable, we need to get some sense of what's going on. And unfortunately, I spent way too much time during the week reading different commentaries, trying to get my head and my heart around what on earth was going through this. I recently bought a new book on the parables by a scholar called Snodgrass. It's a great book, Stories with Intent, and it's a beautiful kind of, he goes into all of the different interpretations and understandings, and for any of the parables, he will go through, you know, the 20 other kind of scholars that have understood this and the way that it's been understood in Protestant tradition, in Catholic tradition, in Orthodox tradition, in Jewish tradition. Because, yeah, I was reading also a Jewish rabbi's take on the parables of Jesus as well. Because he is a Jewish teacher, and so it's important to get that kind of perspective as well. And as they're going through and trying to make sense of where does the parable actually begin and end, well, the beginning is simple enough, but does it finish at verse 7? Does it finish the first line of verse 8? Was this the second line of verse 8? Was it verse 9? So all of this kind of discussion around it. But within that Jewish context, the first thing is that Jews were forbidden from charging interest on loans. So that seems to be the basis of what we need to first understand, that this man who has these debts that are owed the master. So it's likely that what they do to get around this system of not being able to charge interest is, if you borrow 50 measures of wheat or oil, you might put in your books that you owe 100. And so that covers up the fact that you're charging interest. But when the steward is dismissed for his dishonesty, he is in that position at that point to be able to get around that whole system. And so when he calls in the debtors, he isn't yet known that he's been dismissed. So he's still operating with the same authority and the same position of being in the place of the steward. And so he's there operating on behalf of his master, and he's able to dismiss the master's gain, and it probably would have also been part of his own cut in this instance. And he's able to get rid of that because the master is in a bind. The master can't say, hey, come on, you've just done me out of this profit, because it was illegal under the Jewish system for him to charge that profit. And so the master couldn't make a fuss. He couldn't make a fuss publicly about this. He couldn't lose face in front of the debtors and say, no, sorry, you owe me the full measure, the full amount, because he shouldn't have been charging the extra profit in the first place. And so the steward is astute. The steward is wise because he knows the way that the system is working. And so he's simply using that opportunity, moving quickly in order to maximize his chance of winning favor with those around him after he's finally dismissed. That seems to be the essence of what is going on here. But what we don't get is why the master praises him. And certainly there's no hint that Jesus is praising this particular man. He tells us, though, that the sons of light, or the people that are followers of the law of God, need to step up their game. They need to be responsible for what we have received. The people of the world will do these kinds of tactics. We know the people will do terrible things in order to win a few more dollars or to get an increase of profit. And our first reading from the prophet Amos, gives us some of those indications of the way the people manipulate the poor in order to gain a higher profit, and how many poor people are absolutely exploited by the rich and by the wealthy and by the powerful for just a slight increase in the share price or a slight increase in their profit ratio, even though they've already got way too much money that they couldn't possibly ever make use of. And so this call is for us, is how do we respond? How do we offer ourselves? The Lord is giving us these treasures that are precious and priceless, these gifts that are beyond measure, these wonderful things that we can possess and own, things that are not just physical things, like they're all just useless things that will pass away. But we are invited into this treasure of life and goodness and justice. But we risk losing it all if we lose our focus, if we turn our eyes away from the giver of the gift, unless we're able to hold fast to that treasure of love and life and mercy and kindness, we will lose everything else. And so often that's what happens in our world, that we get distracted by all of the bright, shiny things that are around us, and we lose track of this precious gift the Lord is offering to us. And one of those gifts is that ability and desire to protect the most vulnerable, to protect the poor, to protect those who haven't got a voice themselves, to stand up for those who will be abused and will experience all kinds of suffering because of the vulnerability that they have. And so for us, it's a challenge to really look after the poorest and the most vulnerable in our community and in our society. And today, we can really pray that we will have hearts that are softened and changed and transformed by the mercy that we have received, so that we can indeed give our whole hearts fully and completely to serve God alone in this day.